20th, episode 562 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
Edmund from Greenville, and movies about Gallipoli, Mad Max back on the roads. Which decade are we reduxing this time?
I've called the center. It's 1983. Anyway, we are going to be talking about a bit of genre news here at the beginning of our show, and then we'll probably even get into the top shows of the week. But first, Edmund... I guess you can give a mixed disclaimer this time.
Absolutely. When we get around to talking about shows, as always, we will spoil you silly, as we like to do, especially talking about the top shows. But as for the news, we're basically going to do the same thing. But hopefully you will enjoy getting spoiled with all of this, news we were able to dredge up this week.
That's right. And so this is going to be the first time that we do this, although probably with the... dearth of news that we have out there, it's not going to be as meaningful, but we're going to split out the casting stuff a little bit. You'll know when that time comes. But first, we have a bit more about this whole idea of John Ridley and what he may be doing for ABC/Marvel. Right now, the rumor is that ABC may be developing a show based on the recent breakout hit comic book Ms. Marvel, according to the source here, which is Reddit. Anyway, ABC is potentially canceling the low-rated American Crime, but still wanting to work with John Ridley, wants to have him work on a new Ms. Marvel show. Now, for those who are not too well familiar with this particular book, it's basically about a girl named Kamala Khan, and she basically gets some kind of superpowers. But she's an Arab, so she basically has to deal with, you know, her obsession with being a superhero, cultural issues with, you know, Islamophobia and so forth. And it's actually gotten some traction. There are a lot of people who thought that the book would not take off, but it has. Now, the rumor goes on to state exactly what I was kind of thinking might happen, and that this particular show would be a miniseries between the fall and spring runs of next year's season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which that kind of brings up the question, what about Agent Carter?
Yes.
Still unknown.
Exactly.
Unfortunately. So, yes, this is interesting news because, of course, those who are familiar with the book may know Kamala gets her powers because she has been exposed to the Terrigen gas or the Terrigen mist, which is, of course, connected to the Inhumans. So there would be a really easy way to tie her comic book origin to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Absolutely. It's not a book I'm familiar with, so that thanks for the background, but hearing all that, it does seem like that does make it one, why it's one of the obvious candidates they're thinking of to spin out the TV universe a little bit.
Well, not only that, but a show fronted by a young woman, maybe delving into the teen demographic a little bit there. Person of color, certainly, a bit edgy with the fact that the girl would be coming from an Islamic family. That has been part of the story from the beginning. So, yeah, there's a lot of aspects here that would be branching out into many different areas than what is traditionally the Marvel norm, shall we say. But, yeah, I'd be looking forward to it. I'd love to see exactly how they go about doing this. I think it could be a nice extension of the universe.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, we have a little bit different kind of extension of a universe in this next piece.
Yes, indeed. For those of you who wanted more Lego Movie, you're going to get a lot more Lego Movie. They have now released word of release dates for the next three Lego films. The first one, spooling out currently on February 10th, 2017, is the Lego Batman movie, of course, with Will Arnett reprising his role as the moody Dark Knight. And apparently this one will explore Batman's emotions, because that always works so well, and have him trying to find happiness, because that's what he's always trying to do, isn't he? So that's
how I don't know what you're talking about. I'm always happy. That's my secret.
Anyway.
So that would be early 2017. Then in the fall, in September of 2017, will be Ninjago. Was originally going to come out next year, but got pushed back. And then finally, in fact, the third movie they will be spooling out will be the Lego Movie sequel. in May of 2018. So, you know, it certainly makes sense given the response Batman had in the first movie that he gets to be first out of the blocks. But yeah, that I do find that rather amusing. Yeah, so the sequel is actually three films down the road now.
Yeah, I seem to recall that they already mentioned this, but I think that it's the dates themselves that are now the news, because I thought that this was something that had been mentioned back when all that DC and Marvel stuff was being spooled out in terms of initial release dates, that this was something that they talked about. But even so, certainly after that that first movie did so well, you had to know that they were going to do everything possible to expand on it.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, well, let's see here. The next item that we have on the list is somewhat related to the previous news story I was talking about as we go back to the ABC Marvel well. And in this case, we have, a lot of people thought that the John Ripley show was going to be the spinoff for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And as it turns out, that is not the case. Instead, the spinoff that is being developed seems to be related to or focused on Mockingbird and Hunter. That's right. Bobby Morse as the current, part of season two of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., as well as Lance Hunter, who is her ex-husband. Yes, that is the duo that is apparently going to be helming the spin-off series. And I don't know about you, but every single time that they have an action scene with Mockingbird, I just think to myself, please give me the spin-off.
Yes.
I'll be more than happy to have it. Wait, I heard some diabolical laughter. Who could that be?
It is I, Gary. I waited for the good comic book news to jump in.
Well, this is certainly good news for me anyway. I think that a lot of people like Bobby as well.
Yeah, no, she's definitely working out well. And, you know, in the comic books, she is married to Hawkeye, but I guess they couldn't get Jeremy to agree to do serialized television again. So we do have Hunter as a sort of stand-in. And in the comics, they always had sort of a nice vibe, and obviously Hunter is this de facto Hawkeye replacement, and it's still working well. So I'm happy with it. I think they could really go places. I'm not sure if they're going to be a Coulson strike team or really head out on their own even more so. But I like the idea of this married couple spy team. So.
As long as it does better than Undercovers.
Yeah, I was just thinking that.
Not hard to do. So
you're right. It's not. So there we are. Let's see. Gary, actually, I assigned you the next story. It's kind of comic book related, sort of.
Well,
because
yeah.
They just had a continuation of the story in the comic book world.
Yes, and I did get those issues, actually, although I was a mixed concern about this and a little happy and angry at the same time. What we're talking about, of course, is that the movie Galaxy Quest supposedly has a series in the works. It's kind of interesting. They are getting some of the original writers from the movie to move over to the smaller screen or larger screen, depending on your size of viewing apparatus. And they're supposedly moving forward in it. I'm sort of happy about this. You know, any science fiction is good. This sort of Star Trek related one is good. But darn it, I wanted a Star Trek series. I did not want a Galaxy Quest series. Perhaps I didn't phrase my wish right at my last birthday. I'm not sure, but but yeah, it can be fun. I hope they can keep it going. They'll have to go in different routes. I would imagine this would get pretty tedious after a while if they stayed too close to the movie. So we'll have to see. But darn it, I wanted it to say Star Trek. I had to look three or four times before I my brain registered Galaxy Quest. So.
What's your thought on this, Edmund?
Yeah, well, certainly the whole meta aspect of it. I mean, a movie about a fictional TV show now being made into a real life TV show. My immediate question is which way do they want to go with the meta? Is it going to be them actually doing the original Galaxy Quest series, or will it still be behind the scenes? So it's, you know, sort of spoofy look at how these series are made, which was certainly a major part of the original. So I can see it possibly working, but I'm just rather intrigued now with the which way they're planning on going with it.
Well, I'm a little terrified of the casting, quite frankly, because I mean, come on,
yes.
that cast. Mm-hmm. And are they going to do?
Is anyone coming back?
I can't imagine that they are.
No.
you know, but come on, are we going to have the kind of self-aware product placement that can only be matched with the immortal line by Grab Thar's hammer, what a savings.
You do that well, John.
It is Alan Rickman, after all.
Yeah. Like I said, yeah, I can't imagine even the sort of secondary characters from the movies have sort of blossomed a bit into popularity, so I don't...
I think everybody, yeah. I mean, even Sam Rockwell.
Yeah, I was going to say, at first I was like, oh, maybe we'll have Guy. Oh, wait, no, we won't.
But yeah, I'll be... That's the part that I'm really... I mean, yeah, the writing, I mean, we'll see how it goes, but if they don't have the right cast, it's going to feel really like a knockoff. Now, if they put it
on Galaxy Quest to seem like a knockoff, that would be absolutely horrible. Yeah.
Well, it could be. That's the problem. Edmund, I think that we need better news about a show coming back.
Yes. I am sure nobody's surprise, who has been, for those of us who have been burning through the episodes, even though we're just covering them one week at a time on this show, Daredevil has been confirmed to be returning for a second season about a year from now, we can hope. The main difference is that Steve DeKnight and Drew Goddard, well, Drew Goddard, of course, has already walked away, but Steve DeKnight will be stepping down from showrunners. But Doug Petrie and Marco Ramirez will be stepping in, so, and working closely with them. So certainly sounds to me like a case of yes, they are fiddling the behind the scenes, but not in any way that makes me fearful for how they're going to follow up this rather good initial season.
Yeah, those writers, as I recall, are part of the overall extended Whedon production family, as was Steve DeKnight himself. So, yeah, I don't really have much of a problem with this. What about you, Gary? Any thoughts?
Oh, well, it's one of these things when they go to the mine of comic books, when you have 40-plus years of stories to cherry pick from, I don't think it's that hard to come up with a good premise. And, as anyone who actually follows Daredevil for any length of time, could see the comic book well... heavily influenced, not quite to Watchmen levels, but gosh, it was real. They drank deeply from the comic book storyline, and I'm curious if they're going to start to spin off a little bit off the core model at all. But even if they don't, there are multiple storylines I could think of that I would love them to run through anywhere without giving too many spoilers, from Daredevil's mother to Karen Page issues. I can think of several different places we could go in this and still have an amazing viewing experience. So, no, I'm thrilled to see it. I think there's ample room to run with this show for many seasons. So if they can keep up the quality... It's maybe slightly turn up the lighting just a hair. I know he's blind, but do I need to be too?
Yes.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I don't have too many reservations on this one myself. I can't really say that necessarily about, where sci-fi has been going of late. And, what do you think of this particular news or this next article here, Edmund?
Sci-fi has revealed its summer programming for 2015. Some things are returning. Defiance, of course, will be back in June, middle of June. We also have a new scripted series from the producers of Orphan Black and Dark Matter. Killjoys, just from folks who were working on Orphan Black. That's right, Dark Matter, from some of the folks who worked on Stargate Atlantis, and of course had an interesting genesis from comic book to TV. apparently we are going to get a new game show called Geeks Who Drink. And for some reason, it's not subtitled Bronze Thumb at Dragon Con.
I was going to say, some of our audience? Yes.
Is that why he's been gone for some
reason? That's right. He's filming.
Yes.
Now it makes sense.
It does.
But that will be hosted and executive produced by Zachary Levy, of course, of Chuck fame. Not that we'll necessarily be paying attention, or I don't know, I guess John might want to take the hit for the first couple of episodes, but Dominion will also be returning for its second season.
Want to. Thank you. Nice offer. I'll pass.
Summer would not be complete without the latest installment of Sharknado, 3, Oh Hell No.
Oh hell yes.
which will in fact be anchoring the second annual Sharknado Week.
My joy is abundant.
look forward to this in July.
No.
Get your fins ready.
And your chainsaws, of course.
Gary, it's all you.
Oh, no, that looks like it's going to be a lot of fun.
Sharknado Week.
Oh, Sharknado Week, yes. Besides the actual Sharknado Oh Hell No movie, we're also getting Sharktopus versus Whalewolf. This is Roger Corman's third installment in the Sharktopus franchise, so you know it's going to be good. And for all you Starship Trooper fans out there, Casper Van Dien will be in this one. So, you know, tune your VCR or DVR or whatever it's going to be.
Did I show up to the wrong show? What?
No, John, because it gets even better. Yes. There's also another movie, you know, staying with the shark theme, of course, Three-Headed Shark Attack. Robo Shark, Mega Shark versus Colossus, and, you know, not to be left out of any genre at all, Zombie Shark. And, you know, I guess they wanted to finally get off the shark premise, so don't worry if you don't like sharks, they have you covered too. There's also going to have the world premiere of Lava Lantua, starring Steve Guttenberg and Michael Winslow. So, you know, Police Academy fans, ding, ding, ding. You wanted him back on the screen? Well, you got him. So, meanwhile, they are going to be battling a lava-breathing tarantula that threatens to destroy Los Angeles. For those who don't like sharks, yeah. Oh, yeah. I know. Just don't let it go, John. Just I'm going to push through it because, yeah, it's beyond comprehension. Yes. And finally, on a little bit more serious note, season 9 of Face Off will be premiering in mid-July as well. And Mackenzie Westmore in those very nice outfits will be hosting, and there'll be people doing makeup too. So, no, honestly, they do some really cool, I mean, movie-level stuff. So I'm amazed with some of the creative ideas. Even the ones that fall short are better than any cosplay I would ever come up with. So I enjoy watching it.
Yes, it has become a staple of our family viewing here in the household, even if we thought that the person who should have won last season got hosed.
Mm-hmm. I can see that, yeah.
Yes, but at any rate, what can you do? I'm now entirely terrified by sci-fi's summer slate.
Well, you know,
there's a couple good things in there, to be perfect. All kidding aside, beyond Face Off, I'm interested in, of course, Dark Matter, and also, you know, the Return of Defiance. I'm not sure where they're going to go from here, but let's see. And well, granted, the track record hasn't been great for sci-fi shows, new shows lately, but Killjoys, I'll at least give it a shot. It is summer after all. There's not a whole lot else on, but a lot of those other things, I'm speechless.
They took me a little off guard as well.
Yes, indeed. All right. I've got to bring this back to something a little saner. And so we've got a partnership between Telltale Games, which has delivered some awesome stuff lately as far as The Walking Dead, The Wolf Among Us, Tales from the Borderlands, the Game of Thrones narrative game that's out there. You name it, they've done quite a few games, and it's all this, you know, kind of point-and-click adventure-esque type game. Well, they've partnered with Marvel to come out with some future console and PC games starting in 2017. And they're not just talking about one game. They are talking about starting there, but they are maybe potentially going to go beyond that. So, yeah. This could be kind of interesting, although it does seem like they are going anywhere from family-friendly to perhaps more provocative, as there is one line here that kind of jumps out. Sexy games are important to Marvel games, too. Great. Anyway.
But well, maybe it's just a Black Widow game. You know, maybe.
Well, that has possibilities. Yes. Black mm-hmm. Widow and Mockingbird. Mm. There you go. That's making bad thoughts in my head. Edmund, I need to be distracted by something. Maybe some casting news?
Indeed.
Ah!
Ooh, I like that thing.
All right. And what do we have to offer? This one news item.
Yes.
Is it Avengers casting?
Yes, no. Well, from a network we don't usually necessarily hear about on this show, but this is news
And we're about
from,
to learn why.
Yes. From ABC Family. Dominic Sherwood has been cast to play Jace Weiland. And who is Jace Weiland, you ask? Well, he is the lead character in Shadowhunters, which, of course, is that series based on the Mortal Instruments, which we told you about a few weeks ago, I believe. Mr. Sherwood has put in his time recently, starring in the feature film Vampire Academy. So I think he should just fit in perfectly.
Yeah, I'm sure he will. And that's our casting news for this show. So there you go. We didn't have a whole lot of genre news this week. So what we're going to do is take a quick mid-show break. And when we come back, we're actually going to talk about the top shows of the week. So stay tuned. All right, and we are back. And as usual, this is the portion of the week where we start talking about the best shows that we had the privilege of watching this weekend. We're talking about out of 25 episodes this past week.
Slave Driver.
I know. These damn networks. Anyway, that being said, this was an odd week. We did have one show that was way down at the bottom, but our top shows didn't even break the 9 mark, which is rather rare. For the last few weeks, we've had shows that are at least 9, if not above. So perhaps a little bit challenging, a little bit diverse in the opinions and scores from the extended Critical Myth family. But coming in at number 3, Edmund, if you don't mind doing this one.
Certainly. This is The Americans, Season 3, Episode 12, I Am Abyssin Zadran. And if I can get Chrome, there we go, to cooperate. Martha has a surprise guest, Philip and Elizabeth encounter a menacing Mujahideen commander, and Paige acts out.
That's right, and this one came in at an average of 8.5. Edmund, why don't you get us started here?
Certainly. I was actually kind of surprised myself. I hadn't realized, until after the episode had ended, that we were actually up to the next to the last episode of the season. So there was certainly an element of both starting to bring things to a head, but also doing setup for the finale. Spycraft part of it was certainly that whole manipulation of the Mujahideen and the Afghans coming to arrange to get the Stinger surface-to-air missiles, which will eventually prove decisive. But they do manage to pull off the operation, and I definitely am getting this sense of that it's been kind of building. I mean, from last season to this one, they managed to pull it off, but the sort of tactics they're having to use getting, I wouldn't say necessarily extreme, but they're having to push things in ways where they can't necessarily control the outcome. And it did work out this time, but I do kind of wonder, especially in terms of what's being set up with Paige, how much longer they can actually keep this up. For me, the most extraordinary part of the episode was that ending, with the way everything's been building with Martha. And I still get the sense that she may not be in quite as much trouble as she fears, but certainly it's very difficult living in that situation. But that final scene when Philip decides to reveal himself was just in incredibly chilling, especially having just seen two episodes previously if somebody saw Elizabeth without her disguise, they weren't long for this world. So, but I thought they played the line between No, there was part of me that felt he was doing this because he's Philip's been so pulled this way and that there was this sense of no, he really was just wanting to reveal himself and have at least one part of his life that was a little less complicated. Although at the same time, it's also creating all sorts of new potential complications, but I have no idea if this was deliberate, but there was actually part of me in the way he was doing it that was really reminding me of the scene in Man Who Fell to Earth when David Bowie first reveals himself to Candy Clark's character, to his eventual wife, it was quite a different result after he pulled the wig off, but I thought this was a strong setup to the finale, looking forward to seeing what they come up with.
Yeah, it was a very odd episode for a penultimate episode, and it kind of went along with the oddity that it has been this season in general. But I do feel as though that was a really strong way to end the episode, and I'm hoping that they can follow up on it well. Just as they really seem to be bringing some of these plot lines together, but I'm still not sure exactly how this is all supposed to really coalesce, mm-hmm. I guess, for the season. But yeah, that end scene was just crazy because, I mean, yeah, all the layers are being peeled back here in all the worst possible ways, it seems. And this stuff with Paige, they better hope that hinted trip to see Elizabeth's mother is going to end well, because every single episode since that, since she forced them to tell her the truth has gotten closer and closer to disaster, mm-hmm. like major disaster. And I really don't want to see that happen since, again, we kind of know what happens, like you said, when the wrong people find out about the truth.
Yes.
You can't keep their mouth shut. So I guess we'll find out. So let's go ahead then and, Gary, why don't you take our number two show for this week?
Absolutely. Our number two show is Elementary, Season 3, Episode 20, A Stitch in Time. No previews this week?
No previews. Sorry.
We'll just go with we'll go right to the meat of it then. Holmes and Watson investigate the murder of a professional skeptic who debunked paranormal, religious, and scientific phenomena for a living. The probe uncovers a potential threat to Homeland Security. Meanwhile, Gregson's daughter asked Jones for help with a case. This came in, as you said, our number two, with an average of 8.5.
Yes, that's right. So, and you guys are the ones who watched this one, so I'll let you go ahead and jump in first, Gary, and then Edmund, you can follow up.
Absolutely. Sure, no problem. As typical with an elementary episode, there was an A and a B plot, and while I thought the A plot, sort of uncovering somebody in their basement who we thought was a ghost, turned out to be the first turn was that it was a national security issue, and the third turn it turned out to be just somebody trying to get over on insider trading. So I enjoyed the double flip of the A mystery of the of the episode. It was more original than they've come up with in a while, so that alone gave it high marks for me. And then the second one was sort of interesting. Gregson's daughter, asked Watson for help in a case, and Watson helped her sort of set things in line. And it was more than implied that Gregson's daughter did it just to score points and not to actually make the criminals pay or get the most impact for the arrest. And even Gregson was just sort of knew she was going to do it, and his motivations just left me sort of scratching my head. Edmund, what do you think about that? I wasn't sure what he did. He want her to fall? Did he want her to just learn on her own? I couldn't quite get it.
Yeah, it. I got the impression more that. He's aware of his daughter's ambitions and certainly this whole thing is sort of putting career first and getting the big bus to get the publicity and score the points within the department as opposed to running them and and kicking it upstairs to a certain extent, where it then becomes an operation where they're just observing them and getting to the bigger dealers, sort of the quote, what's certainly implied to be the quote unquote correct way of doing things, or getting the most the most bang for your buck, even though she might not get the direct credit she was looking for. But my sense was it was more that thing of, a father who he knows what she's doing, he's kind of hamstrung by because she's his daughter, he feels he can't bring himself to really come down on her. It's sort of like he's aware that there are the different ways of playing this game and doing this job, and he may be a little disappointed that she's choosing that role to try and work her way up the ladder, but it's also sort of the acceptance that that is a way of doing it.
Fair enough. Yeah, it seemed a little ambiguous originally to me. And how did you like the main plot of it? I thought it was better than it's been they've done in a while, as far as imagination.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, having having something that does get a little twistier, and compared to some of the recent episodes where it really felt like it could have been a case that pretty much any decent detective would figure out, this one was feeling like it was stretching Holmes and Watson a little bit more, which is always good to see.
Yeah, so it sounds like, the funny thing is, last week, Elementary was in the bottom three, and here it is in the number two slot.
The main plot was, at least the contrivance about it was entertaining, and then this whole sort of Gregson's daughter, coming out and doing sort of gray hat activities rather than white hat activities. It was a different flavor than we're used to seeing for the main characters or even their immediate friends. So yeah, it shook it up a hair. I wouldn't say rocked the boat, but gave it a little shake.
Fair enough. All right, well, that brings us to our number one show for the week, and that is a very familiar face, though perhaps not the one that people were expecting. Number one show for the week is Arrow, Season 3, Episode 19, Broken Arrow. Deathbolt, a metahuman who kills people with blasts of energy and plasma, terrorizes Starling City, which forces Oliver to form an unlikely partnership with Ray to save the town. All right, and this one came in at an average of 8.8, and quite frankly, it would have been even higher if Nadim hadn't given it a 7.5. What was he thinking? Anyway, Gary, you gave it a 9.5.
Yeah, we got to see, super suits. We got to see a superhero team up. We got to see more than one main villain in the episode. Captain Lance, go off on Oliver as well. Then we get this whole setup with him getting arrested. I thought it was wonderful. I don't know how much more you could get out of an episode.
Yeah, it was certainly packed. Well, Nadim's issue with this episode, and of course, remember everybody, the spoiler warning, was that, with Thea supposedly getting gutted at the very end, he seemed to think that the obvious next steps were kind of telegraphed to the hilt. Heh, no pun intended. No, it's entirely intended.
No. Yes.
But yet, you know what? When I've always said there's a difference between a well-constructed story and one that is overly predictable. And yes, you could tell where this is going to go because they've been leading towards this for weeks, for many episodes, this second half of the season at the very least. But what I didn't see happening was the whole thing with Roy. That was a little surprising to me. What about you, Edmund? What were your surprises this episode?
Certainly. I mean, it was what I liked about the Roy reveal was that it was one of those things where you weren't necessarily expecting it, but once it happened, it certainly brought together a lot of the threads, primarily with his guilt and wanting to atone somehow, and having this opportunity presented to him to do it. So it, you know, I thought it was a very nice job of sort of bringing the different plot threads in the, you know, within the team itself more to a head than they normally do. You know, there's been this tendency that, I mean, that started back in the first season of where, you know, it was like they had all the disparate parts and were having trouble sort of bringing them together and juggling them. And I think they're getting much, much better at doing that. Yeah.
So, Gary, how about your thoughts on what happened with Roy and even with Thea?
Well, I mean, they were telegraphing it a little thick in the beginning of this episode with Roy, but, you know, as you think of the sacrifice Oliver was going to make, it made, you know, just as much sense for what Roy wanted to do. So I like the twist of it. You know, it makes sense. Heck, the story will hold up. You know, oh, well, how can prove the arrow, shoot so far away and he'll be able to do it. So, you know, I thought it was good. It lets Oliver, stay on his path, Roy to make his redemption. So it closed a circle for the moment, but how the heck will Green Arrow continue to operate if they think Arrow's in prison and then a new Arrow comes up? It still might shake out a little bit rough. As far as the Thea goes, yeah, I mean, if it wasn't going to be her, it was going to be somebody else that was going to, you know, that was going to get mortally wounded at some point and have this happen. They've been talking about it for, geez, like the last 6 to 7 episodes where it always is mentioned in some way, shape, fashion, or form. So it didn't surprise me that it was used. I wasn't expecting Thea, though. I thought it was going to be someone closer to the main cast. My guess was actually Canary, given how much they have to pull her butt out of the fire all the time. But I was okay with it.
Yeah, it did make sense for it to be Thea, probably because of the connection with Malcolm that they were playing with earlier in the season, and his, of course, connection to Ra's al Ghul. So, yeah, I just thought that this was a really nice way to resolve that whole Arrow problem. As far as, you know, how is Oliver going to continue to operate as the Arrow with Roy taking the fall like this? I guess we're going to have to find that out. Now, Gary, you are the DC guru among us here.
Yes.
Now that we've seen more of the Atom and Ray Palmer.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts here?
Well, besides it bearing virtually no relation to the actual comic book character at all, nor his immediate relationships, and Ray Palmer was never rich. It's really a unique character to itself, so there's not much for me to really go off of. I was even speaking with my son a few days ago about him versus the Golden Age Adam, who was this, while pint-sized, was still this sort of strong guy, but that's not even a good analogy either. I'm hard-pressed to come up with one in the DC universe. They don't really have an Iron Man, so to speak.
They do now.
That's true. They do now, and I still would have liked them to try and pull it just a hair closer to the comic book in some way, shape, fashion, or form. But it never happened, and I don't see it happening at this point with what they've laid down as far as his origin, motivations, and relationships. So I think it's okay. I mean, an Arrow. I don't like these overly superpowered people. It doesn't work well in his subsection of the universe. I think over in Flash, it works a lot better, honestly. So but this is yet another pimp at the spinoff, I'm assuming also. So, you know, anytime we see him now, I just think, oh, well, backdoor pilot kind of scene. But it doesn't bear any relation to the comics at all. And I think you're going to be hard pressed to find anything past the names. His name and the Atom name bearing any relation.
Yeah, that was kind of what I was getting at here because, they seemed to hint earlier in the season that some of his, you know, constant talk about miniaturization was actually maybe going to play into it. But that seemed to just be about his electronics.
Yeah, or even at least, you know, in the comics, his suit was powered by white dwarf matter. I would have loved to have them work that way into the power suit. And when he was talking over on the Flash about power issues, I was hoping that's what was going to come up, but it never did either. So,
what you going to do? All right. Well, that is it for our top three, and that'll be it for this show. So we will be resuming next time with our bottom three scored episodes and about as much content as you could possibly imagine. Yeah, it might be a little bit of a bigger show next time, but I'll leave it till then.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google Plus, under The Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as fair use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the critical myth.